Hey, boys and girls, grab your capes and cowls. It's that time again. Superhero Speak, episode 35. Yay! Hey, everyone. Welcome to our year-end wrap-up for 2013. This is A Hostful with John, Ben, and I, and we sit down and talk about all the highlights of 2013 and what we're looking forward to in 2014. And I just want to take this moment to say thank you to all our listeners who stuck with us through this year, and keep listening because things are just going to get better in 2014. Thanks and Happy New Year. Hey guys, so 2013 is coming to an end.
What?
Yes, that's how time works.
I was not ready.
You're not? So, wow, I know. I mean, it's hard to believe, though. 2013's ending, like...
In days. Well, it depends on when we post this.
Well, it's going to be posted the last week of December, yes. So yes, in days.
Still feels like we have weeks left, though.
It does feel that way.
Yeah, that's only because the Doctor Who ending hasn't happened yet. You're waiting for the Christmas episode.
Yes. I am waiting for that, which will have come out by the time this is released.
Yes, so hopefully Everyone watched and enjoyed the Christmas episode.
It was much better than I expected.
I'm giving it 5 capes.
5? Hey, that's not very high.
Oh, that's right.
Out of 10. Ten.
I give it 11 capes.
5 because I haven't 12. Seen it yet.
Anyway, let's do some in memory of the year, some things that from the past year that we'd like to speak about.
Yeah, I like, you know, one of the things I thought was appropriate to talk about was movies.
I like movies.
Yes, and I think we should just do another recap on Man of Steel. Since
talk more about it. Yes, please.
Well, that's how this show started, by talking about Man of Steel.
Yes,
quite a lot.
That's very true. So, it's funny, actually, that you bring that up, because, so, if we go back and listen to that, the Man of Steel episode, even after we'd seen it, mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain, if I recall, I was very positive about it. You guys were both, had some ambivalence, and I was pulling you guys over to the side of liking the movie.
To the dark side, yes.
Yes. In hindsight, I actually feel a lot differently about the movie than I did at the time. I still like it. I still think it was a different interpretation. I don't, like, the things that you disliked about it, Dave, I still agree were the better ways to go with it. But I think in light of some of the other movies we've seen this year, some of the other superhero movies, in context, I think that it was severely lacking in lightness, in any sort of comedic value or hope that are you know, hallmarks of the Superman character and mythos. I think those are important to that characterization. And I felt that those were severely lacking. And it does give me a lot of pause for the continuation of that series.
Well, and that's... But that I was about to ask, you know, so what do you think about, you know, there's a lot of rumors about Man of Steel right now. Not even rumors. I mean, we all know, it's confirmed at this point that Batman and Wonder Woman are both going to be in it.
Right, those are officially cast. There are a lot of rumors as well, but yes, we do know that Ben Affleck will be Batman, and we do know that some woman named Gal Gadot will be Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And we've heard a lot of other rumors of people being cast, but in nebulous parts that have yet to be announced. So, other than that, we know very little.
So do you think bringing in Batman and trying... I mean, there was already no lightheartedness in Man of Steel. So now they need... For that relationship to work, they have to have the dark brooding of Batman against the lightheartedness of Superman.
Right. Well, maybe he'll be the contrast that helps pull Superman back to a better place.
A non-neck-snapping area, is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes, pull him from the brink of just snapping everyone's necks. Making him realize that if he goes too dark, he could end up being like Batman.
There you go.
I don't remember Batman snapping many necks.
Well, he's not that strong, so...
Yeah.
I'm sure he's wanted to.
Probably, quite a few times. Actually, that's funny, too. That it had come up, the Killing Joke, which came out, I'll say, 25 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Which, it's funny, because like, I've read the book, and this came out, this is an article that came out this year, and Grant Morrison was on an episode of Fat Man on Batman where he talked about this, so it became a news article in the comic world. And it's one of these things like a lot of people never thought about, but now they're like, it came to the forefront where, if you read the story, at the end of the story, it's kind of left up a little bit for interpretation. But Batman kills the Joker.
Right.
At the end of the story, he apparently breaks his neck or something, because he's he tells a joke about the Joker tells a joke about two guys escaping an insane asylum and basically using a flashlight for the bridge to get across a gap and like they start laughing, the two of them. The camera pulls away and then the Joker's laughing and all of a sudden the laughter stops and then the light goes out. And that was, you know, Alan Moore's way of saying that, you know, Batman just finally killed him. And that's, you know, the Killing Joke was the title of the book.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting, you know, that I read that book. I didn't really get that interpretation when I read it because I didn't think, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't think they're going to kill off the Joker like that, you know. And many fans never thought that. And, you know, so many years later, you know, people were like, no, that's what happened. So I thought that was interesting that came out this year. The year that, you know, Superman snapped Zod's neck.
Yeah.
The Batman did it.
Right. along the lines of the whole neck snapping thing, I've heard a lot of people talk about the whole canon of it, that Superman has killed Zod in other, you know, incarnations in the comics and things like that.
Yes.
But... You know, someone made, I think, a valid argument that, yes, there have been storylines, you know, there in Superman canon where he has killed. But you have to also take into account, Superman storyline has 75 years of history written by lots of different people and artists. And occasionally some people are going to impose their own values on things. And so the handful of instances where he, you know, breaks character a little bit doesn't necessarily... mean that that's who he is.
True. And the argument's been made too because of the gold and silver age. Well, not even so much the silver age, but gold age Superman. But the gold age Superman was a much different Superman than he, you know, was when we were kids.
Yeah.
He was a chauvinistic pig.
Yeah, he was kind of a dick.
Yeah.
To put it lightly. I mean, I remember seeing a lot of, you know, posted like these snippets from some of the like 40s and 50s era comics where, like, you know, some teenager wanted to get into film, so he, like, and Superman's like, okay, and goes and exposes him to you know, toxic waste, so he turns into a mutant so he can be in monster movies. So yeah, there's a questionable variegated history to Superman to a degree, but the character has been honed to some sort of definition over time that, you know, may be different than how he was originally, but it's what we come to expect of him.
Right.
By the way, I'm sending you guys a link, and it probably would be good to attach it to this as a, you know, addendum piece to this particular when we post it. There's I don't know if you've seen any of the Pete Holmes Batman videos, which are a little off color, but hilarious takes on Batman.
Yes, I've seen
this. In this particular one, it was made after the Man of Steel movie came out, and it's got sort of a Batman-Superman pair-up thing. It's pretty funny.
Okay. I will attach that in the description of this episode. So let's move on to a movie that I think we all, on some level, enjoyed.
There was a My Little Pony movie this year.
Hey, if I missed that, I'd be very upset.
No. Iron Man 3.
Yes.
Oh yeah. I've okay.
You don't sound convinced of that, John.
No, sure.
No, I would say, yeah, and in contrast to Man of Steel, Iron Man 3, I still feel pretty much the same way I do now as I did after we watched it. I really thought that it was a solid movie. I think that it was well done. It did have a lot of that comedy, a lot of that lightness. The only discoloration I've noticed, you know, in hindsight, is it did have a bit of a lacking of Iron Man. But I'll forgive that a bit, because it was a good character-building story. Both for him and, you know, for building the world a little bit more. You know, it felt organic, it fit. You know, I couldn't find a lot of holes in it. And I know we talked a lot about the whole Mandarin twist. I thought that was fun and an interesting take, but it did rub a lot of people the wrong way. Though I've also heard, you know, we've heard rumors more recently that they may actually somehow find a way to work the real Mandarin back into things, which should be interesting.
Yes. Yes, are you still chafed from that, John?
The Mandarin thing? No. I think that they did a very good job with the Mandarin. I think that was it was not a twist, but it was a good plot point. I liked the way they worked it. And I'd like to see that, you know, the very first scene of Iron Man 4 is the real Mandarin taking down that actor, or just, you know, meeting up with him saying, hey, we need to have a few words. But the one thing I still get over, I can't wait to see what happens the next time the Avengers come up is, hey, Tony, get your suit. We need to go. guys.
And had surgery to remove that thing from my chest.
Well,
I'm still Iron Man, though.
Along those lines, though, I do think that
I'm Iron Man.
I do think that was part of the point of the story of that movie, was that he is Iron Man. He doesn't need the suit to be Iron Man. And that's what
right. That's why he's not defined by the suit. He's not defined by the arc reactor in his chest.
Right.
You know, it's him.
No, he's defined by all the things he can't do now that he doesn't have either of those.
But he can put the arc reactor still in the suit.
Exactly. I mean, the suit flew around on its own already, so it was clearly already self-powered.
Right. Yes, so Jarvis is Iron Man. I get it.
Yes.
Right. No, Jarvis is Ultron.
That's part of the rumors, yes.
Yes.
Jarvis is somehow involved with the creation of Ultron. So
we'll see.
This is why we should raise minimum wage.
Not sure I see the tie exactly there, John.
Jarvis in the movies isn't a person. He's a computer program.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Did you miss that one? Did you keep wondering why he was never on screen?
No, I know exactly what's going on. Really?
Have you been drinking already?
Drinking? No, it's past 9. Yeah, probably. So, no, I really liked Iron Man 3. It was good. Was good. It's nice that Pepper could now take over the responsibility of being the superhero in the family.
Yeah, you know. You got to dual hero family.
Yes. Yeah.
And they can have little iron children.
Mm. Yeah. She's gonna have to shop at the same place where Bruce Banner gets his pants, because otherwise she's gonna have a problem with the fire retardancy problem.
She already seems to purchase those types of fabrics as it is, though.
Yeah, it's true. It's
at
amazing
least in her pants and undergarments.
Yeah, it's amazing how those kind of survived the entire fireball then.
Right, and rubble and shrapnel falling upon her as well.
Mm.
That was the most disappointing part of that movie. Oh, wait.
We're not going to get into the whole thing about why people hate her still, but She better be in the next one, though. I really would not want to see another one if they try anything with the, oh, she left him or whatever.
Yeah.
If they do make another one, it's got to be like Joss Whedon says, it's got to be about family. They're sticking together, you know, even if she has a smaller part. I would rather not see them pull the old stupid plot points of either killing her off or having her, you know, be divorced in some other country or state or whatever.
Well, the question is, because I don't read a lot of other people's opinions because I give my own. People who don't like her, is it because they don't like the character? They don't like...
I don't know who doesn't like her, though. Like, I'm not sure who these people are.
Is it
I haven't read those opinions.
Or is it fanboys who are unhappy that they've made Pepper Potts and Tony Stark a couple where they've never really been a couple in the comics?
I don't think people have a problem with that, per se. I think that there are... When it comes to female actresses in general, there are people who are, to put it, you know, simply haters. You know, people who just don't like Gwyneth Paltrow as a person and won't like any role that she's in, no matter how good a job she does at it. You know, same thing goes with, you know, Amy Adams, Kate Bosworth, any of the different actresses they put in these roles. Women tend to, there are not a large collection, but some collection of women who just don't like that actress no matter what they do.
Yeah, whoever hates Amy Adams has a real problem.
Yeah.
How could you not like her?
I don't know, but there are people. They exist.
So Ben, your wife doesn't like Gwyneth Paltrow?
No, she doesn't. I like Gwyneth Paltrow.
You just sounded like you were speaking from personal experience. That's all.
I have personal understanding of these things because we discuss these things openly.
Oh, okay. All right. The other movie, well, there's two more big comic book movies that came out this year. The next one on our list, I actually haven't seen yet.
You're not missing much.
And I'm not sure if John's seen it yet either, The Wolverine.
Oh, God, no, I did not see that.
Did you
say that plural? Yes, I did see The Wolverine. I'm the only one here, apparently. I saw it in the theater. It was okay. It's apparently out on DVD now and Blu-ray. It was... And apparently there's a lot they cut out of it that may be in the DVD release that probably makes it better a little bit. The only thing that I know for sure that they cut out was... They cut a decent amount of blood from the movie to keep it like a PG-13 rating.
Mm-hmm.
And they added all that back in the Blu-ray release.
Right.
Good. But it was just, I mean, it was a Wolverine story. The problem is that none of the other characters are really recognizable characters. They're D-list characters at best. You know, the most recognizable other characters you had in there was, you know, the Silver Samurai, who you saw for all of 10 minutes. And you had Viper, who you saw for scattered throughout the movie for all of 10 minutes, and most of it not really doing anything with her abilities. And a lot of the rest of it was just some backstory and history and Wolverine fighting people, you know, for parts of the time normally and other parts of the time with his healing ability weakened. So, I don't know. It could have been better. But, you know, it wasn't horrible.
Well, I do find that fascinating, because it's like, in the last Wolverine movie, they included Gambit, because a lot of fans wanted Gambit. They included Deadpool, because fans wanted Deadpool. They included Sabretooth again, different version of Sabretooth than we already had.
All those things helped them a lot.
Right, but, I mean, like, they threw a lot into that movie, and then all of a sudden, they make the next one, or like, we're just dealing with solo Wolverine characters, you know, and Silver Samurai might be his most well-known solo arch nemesis, but it just seems like there's so many other great X-Men villains that they could have pulled from that they're never going to use in any of the X-Men movies, that, you know, would have made a much... you know, much better story, or even just bring Sabretooth back, you know?
Yeah, I think people were done with Sabretooth. He kind of, He was kind of he was okay in the Wolverine origin movie, but I wouldn't say he was. Well, comparatively, he was probably one of the better characters in that movie. But that's not saying a lot. The problem with that movie was how, yes, they used a lot of recognizable characters, but they didn't make them recognizable. They made weird alternate versions of them that nobody cared for. You know, Deadpool being the quintessential version of that. Mm-hmm. Gambit, I was actually generally okay with Gambit, but it could have been done better. And you didn't see him, like, did he ever throw any cards? I don't think he ever did.
No, I don't think so.
That was disappointing. But yeah, so I'd say, yeah, and the Wolverine movie, if the Wolverine story itself in this one was stronger, it probably would have been fine. But I just felt there was all these characters that it was hard to relate to, hard to really care about them, or, you know, if you didn't really know enough about them to know who they were. And I didn't feel like there was enough of a story there to tie to. Couldn't tether my cart to that horse.
No.
Not so much. Right. Thor, on the other hand, the Dark World.
I was going to say, John, speaking of gods.
Ha, ha, ha. Yes, Thor was excellent. I liked that. It was... Yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit slow in the beginning, but it finished incredibly strong.
Yeah,
and watching watching Mjolnir try to find its way back to him, and having to take U-turns and go through the subway and whatever, that was good.
It was. Their ability to find comedy in a hammer was pretty clever.
Well, it seems that the writers that they have for the Thor trilogy, or, you know, it's going to be a trilogy, but we hope. Yeah. But it seems like the writers have got for that are maybe a lot better than the ones they have for the Wolverine movies.
Yeah. And you're thinking too small, John. It's a franchise.
Yes, I know.
It's going to go on forever.
And ever and ever and ever.
Until Chris Hemsworth is very, very old.
Or if anything happens to him and he's too ugly to play Thor.
Well, eventually... You know, they'll recast him as someone younger, and Chris Hemsworth will come back as Odin.
Yes, he'll almost get killed, then he'll regenerate, and then he'll get new companions. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, that's wrong.
Does he go around in a blue telephone booth?
Yeah.
A blue box.
Telephone box, sorry.
The Tesseract in.
Sorry, I'm not British, you know.
Anyway... It was a fruitful year for superhero movies, looking back.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, and Thor was a strong movie to end the year on, definitely. It made me look forward to the sequel, because, I mean, come on, it ended on a cliffhanger, people. Of course there's going to be a next one.
Perhaps. Yeah, I guess it did leave a bit of a note to follow up on.
Oh, they can't leave it like that, not with Loki out and playing Odin.
Right.
True.
Sorry. Yes.
I was just going to say, but looking ahead, we do have a lot of interesting new movies in the next year, with Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and X-Men Days of Future Past. And probably something else I'm not thinking of right now.
Right, yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, there's which actually is just, it's another strong Marvel year.
Yeah, all around.
Yeah.
At least on the big screen.
Yes, it looks like Days of Future Past looks like it's going to be really good. I'm nervous about Amazing Spider-Man 2.
So am I. I'll second that.
Yeah, I think we chatted a little bit about this, but I don't know if we really officially talked about it. They had the newer trailer that came out recently, and when I watched it, I thought, this looks awesome. And I am totally scared this movie is going to suck balls.
Yeah, so the best 3 minutes in that preview.
Yes, because it's just, they did so many things and so many cool visuals, but, like, you saw evidence of at least three villains actually being represented on the screen, and at least three others, you know, references possibly coming in the future. So
yeah, and I also I couldn't quite understand what was going on with that version of Green Goblin or whatever he's supposed to be. Like,
I've gotten the impression that might actually be because I think we're going to see Harry suit up in this one, but that's not necessarily. That doesn't count out Norman as possibly, you know, goblining up. You know, maybe not in this movie. Maybe that'll be like a, you know, end of the movie thing or post credit scene where he, you know, enhances himself to, and so he'll be the Green Goblin in the next movie. But you know, so there's still a chance that we may see the Norman Osborn Green Goblin at some point. But in this one, it seems like we're getting Harry flying around. And at least suited up. Maybe not necessarily roided up. You know, with the whatever serum.
Right. But, I mean, it was interesting because, like, he didn't look like he had a mask on, you know. But he had, like, green hair that was all messed up.
Have some kind of the crazy hair going.
Right. Like,
and the weird exosuit, like he was trying to be, you know, skinny emo Iron Man.
Yes, exactly.
Iron Patriot, you mean, right?
and then you had the Rhino, which is a giant mechanical suit.
Yeah, I'm not thrilled about that. I mean, it looked kind of cool, but it's not the Rhino, you know?
Right. It's steampunk Rhino.
Yeah. Oh. That's a good way to characterize it.
Yes.
Well, it is. It's exactly what it is. You know, all you need is for him to stop halfway through a run to let out a, you know, big burst of steam and then carry on.
I know that's going to happen.
So we got steampunk Rhino, emo Iron Man Goblin, and you know,
Electro.
So Lightning Bolt, Electro.
Well, it's really very close to like the ultimate version of
it is Electro. It definitely is, which feels less hokey than the green spandex with yellow lightning bolts version in the traditional universe.
Yes, I think movie makers everywhere, when they came out with that version of Electro, went yes,
yeah,
yeah,
someone we can use on the screen.
Yeah,
yeah. So it should be good. I mean, yeah. And there were hints of Doc Ock and Vulture as well.
Venom, actually. They didn't show anything visually as far as, like, a thing with that, but there was apparently in one of the screens where they show, like, all this stuff, like, files that they're going through on a computer, there was something labeled, like, the, you know, Venom files or something like that.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And there was also some, yeah, and there was also some reference that, you know, the lizard's still technically kicking around. So there's a lot of things they could do. They could do a Sinister Seven, maybe, or eight. So,
how many villains can we fit into this movie?
All of them.
Well, if the last ones made so much money and they only had three, then obviously the more villains you have, the higher the gross. That's it.
Exactly. It's worked so well for every other franchise that's done it.
Yes. Well, and then, you know, Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
The other piece of news is that they already announced the sequel to that.
Oh, yes. X-Men Apocalypse.
Apocalypse, yes.
2016. We got a couple years before that one come along.
Yeah. But, I mean, I figured it was worth mentioning.
Yes.
Since we haven't officially mentioned it on the podcast yet.
Fair enough.
And now we shan't speak of it again until 2016.
Ever. It shall be stricken. I'm looking at your list, by the way, Dave, and you mentioned all the cartoon stuff, but you didn't put a TV category on here.
Then let's get to TV.
Move from the big screen to the small screen? Is that what you're saying?
Let's move to the small screen.
All right.
And let us talk about something that we've not really talked about on the show much, but we're all fans of this show. We've been watching it for the last year and a half.
My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
Oh, that's even better. I like that answer, yeah.
And that is, and that's an escape from Marvel into the world of Arrow.
Ah, yes.
You mean there's a non-Marvel superhero out there?
There's apparently. Apparently, yes.
That doesn't break necks. He shoots people with arrows.
Yes.
Still killing.
Well, yeah.
It's just, you know, it's ranged assault. So, yeah, Arrow is in its second season now on the CW. And aside from being a CW show, it's pretty good.
Ooh. That's the best backhanded comment I've heard in a while.
Well, what's interesting, I kind of want to bring this up and just lay it all out there right now. They definitely started out last year with the no powers mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And they seemed like they were going to stick strong to that.
They adhered to it fairly well. They did for the entire first season.
Yes.
And for at least part of this season so far, but
now all of a sudden
steering away from it.
Surprise, surprise, spoilers ahead.
Where? What? Huh?
So here's, let me nutshell it a little bit with this. I like the premise. I liked, you know, starting off that you have Oliver Queen, this rich, you know, bratty, born into money kind of guy, goes on the cruise with his dad and ends up in the accident that lands him on the island. So it's more than him just being like, but, you know, unlike the original origin, it's not him just being marooned on an island. He's marooned on this vicious, you know, den of thieves island, you know, near Far East Asia, where all these things have been going on, and he has to, it's a crucible for him that he has to, you know, fight his way through. And we get peppered little bits of that episode by episode throughout the seasons, and I think it makes for a really interesting twist to the story of sort of you're getting that story of what happened to him in those 5 years on the island, mm-hmm. while also seeing what's happening to him now that he's back home and, you know, readjusting to normal life.
But let's, before you go on, let's talk about the issue you brought up the other day when we're talking about the show. It leads for interesting continuity issues.
It does, because there's, so for instance, you know, in the very first pilot episode, they showed he's on this yacht with his dad and his dad's business partner and his girlfriend's sister, who he's secretly having a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
And they established pretty firmly that, you know, she went down with the ship. She was never to be seen again. And to cement that, like, middle of last season, they had an episode where, you know, her mother comes around saying that she might have found some evidence that their daughter is still alive. And, you know, Ollie was pretty firm. He was like, no, you got to squash this. She's dead. And lo and behold, they come to this season and they reveal within the first couple episodes, oh, by the way, she's alive and she's part of the League of Assassins.
Yes. And she's...
And Ollie knew about it the whole time.
And she's this universe's...
Black Canary.
Black Canary, thank you.
Well, not entirely. They are planning on having the real Black Canary later on, what I've heard. Yeah.
How are they going to make that transition from her just setting off a sound bomb to actually being able to screech like a whatever? Like
No, it won't be her. It'll be her sister.
You think so?
Yeah, that's what the article I read said, and it assured that it will be a transition, that it will make sense somehow.
All right. That should be interesting.
Yeah, every time What's-Her-Face coughs now, I'm like, oh, is she getting her powers?
Well, I don't think it'll automatically manifest like that. I think it might be somehow...
It's going to have to. Yeah.
And still, well, here's the thing. So you're caught up. So yes, he's been starting to have more of a connection with Alderman Blood, or Alderman. What is his name? Sebastian.
Blood. Sebastian Blood. Yeah.
who is now running for mayor, who also happens to be the secret head of the Blood Brotherhood, and wears that weird skull mask that seems to want to be the Scarecrow mask.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So, it's possible that may somehow lead to her getting her abilities.
Well,
through that sequence of events. I thought that maybe they might find a way to do that with the Dollmaker episode.
Yes.
Because there was in that episode earlier this season, she was captured by the Dollmaker, who like plasticizes his victims by filling their lungs with an epoxy. And I thought maybe like she was on the verge of having that happen to her, and thought maybe, all right, maybe a small amount of that does get into her system and renders her, you know, whatever voice box, you know, inert or, you know, unable to function. But then, through some miracle of technology, not only gets her voice back, but can do these sonic screeches. But that didn't happen.
No.
Yet.
But, one of the things I think to point out to people listening who might not have watched the show yet.
Don't listen to this if you haven't watched it yet.
Spoilers.
Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. No. I was going to say that it's interesting because there are aspects that they keep true to the comic book continuity, and then there are aspects that are totally created for this show.
Yeah,
The fact that he has the two partners on the show,
right? With Diggle and Felicity, who are Diggle's not even a story or a character from canon at all. They made him up for the show. Felicity Smoke is a character that's existed in the comics, but is not typically associated with Green Arrow.
Right.
So, it is interesting how they're doing that, how they're using those characters. Actually, Felicity Smoke was typically associated with Sunfire.
Sunfire, really?
The guy who, like, would merge with his professor to form this, you know...
Firestorm,
that guy.
That's Firestorm, yeah. I remember him.
Yeah, there's association there. Because I want to say that she was involved with the professor guy. So, anyway. Right. I'm sure someone will correct me if they're actually paying attention. So, they're
screaming at you right now.
Yeah. So they're making their own canon here to a great degree, but also trying to create a wider canon, because supposedly this is supposed to be able, you know, they've been talking lately that they want to do what Marvel's doing and create this movie TV hybrid universe, and through that they're now creating the Flash, who presumably might be getting his own show, but also could potentially show up in the upcoming movies, and we'll see how that actually all pans out.
Yeah, the one thing I'm worried about this is that at least with the Marvel guys, as the movies go on and the TV show now, you're hearing, you know, they'll mention, oh yeah, you know, how can you believe that anything's impossible when we have Thor around and that sort of thing, or, you know, we hear about things going on.
Yeah.
But with the Arrow TV show, it's like, all right, by this time, Superman has got to be around. People must be hearing about some crazed bat-caped person over in Gotham.
Yeah,
you should be hearing other things.
Right. There should be those rumblings, and there haven't been. Like, I could see that maybe they could find a way to pick a point in time where Superman, the events of Man of Steel happened, and now they're known about in Arrow, and or at least reference that. Did you hear what happened to Metropolis? You know, last month or whatever.
Yes, and Arrow has to clean up. And Arrow has to help clean up the stuff.
Yeah, well, I don't know how close Metropolis is to Starling City, but
I'm sure S.H.I.E.L.D. can bring him there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine if there isn't. I'd be fine even if they didn't have that level of crossover. If they just simply acknowledged it that it existed, but more to the point, if they are doing what they say they're doing as far as introducing Batman into the movie universe as having been like, a long-standing grizzled version of Batman that's been around, then he definitely should have been known about and have been around in the Arrow universe.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we've talked about it would be great if DC does what Marvel's doing and connect their continuities of their movies with their TV show, but are they going to do that. I mean,
yeah,
they've talked about it, and hopefully they will, but they haven't done it yet.
It's a bandwagon, and people are trying to jump onto it, and we'll see how well they succeed. Because they're not the only ones. The other people who've started claiming that they're going to create a similar continuity and hired someone to that effect is Fox. Basically, recently, you know, has stated that, oh, we're going to create a continuity now between all of the X-Men stuff and Fantastic Four, because we have those. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to reboot Fantastic Four in the continuity of the X-Men, and they've hired some guy to be their Kevin Feige over on that side to help with that.
Huh.
But I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, this is Fox, you know. I'm still really upset about Firefly, so I'm
upset about a lot of things when it comes to Fox.
Yeah, I'll believe it. Yeah, like you said, I'll believe it when they actually do it and manage to pull it off. Because I don't think that the company has the drive or the vision to be able to execute on that for very long at all.
If they do, I will commend them. But it's
exactly
they really have to prove it. You know, and I mean, there have been so many shows that Fox has brought up and canceled and teased us with that my taste is sour to the point where I won't start up a new Fox show if I can avoid it. The only new Fox show that I've actually taken up recently is Almost Human, which I really enjoy. It's a good show, but you know, I'm watching it with bated breath because you know if it doesn't, you know, catch, I probably won't be seeing it next year.
Right, right. No, and actually, I heard a rumor, and it seems weird that this is with Fox. You'd think this would be a CW show as well. And it ties in with Arrow. Is Gotham, yes. And they're talking about that being on Fox.
Yeah, that seems like it's a done deal, like that they're definitely doing that next season. And they're now saying that not only is it because it's supposed to center around Gordon before he was commissioner, but now they're even going so far as to say that it starts around the events of the death of Thomas and Martha Wayne, and so they're going to cast someone to play, you know, the young Bruce Wayne, like a child age Bruce Wayne in this show.
How are they going to make this work?
I don't know. I mean, it's a world building thing. It's take a procedural crime drama and set it in Gotham City is essentially what it is.
And spend how many seasons waiting for somebody to actually do something superheroic?
I don't know, and I don't know if that's what they're aiming for at all. I don't think the goal is to get to a point where there's a superhero. I don't think this is, you know, the Batman version of Smallville. I think this is just a what if we did this? What if we showed Commissioner Gordon having to deal with these extreme circumstances of, you know, corrupt cops around him and these mafia influences all over? And by the way, you know, mass marauders, you know, trying to run these organizations somehow justified. You know, it's intriguing. We'll see if they manage to actually make something of it.
Right. Well, because like when you hear people talking about the show and what they want to see from it, it's like, you know, oh well, we want to see the side of, you know, Gotham when the police have to deal with these crazies without Batman's help. But it's like, but you're not going to have Joker or Penguin or any of those villains because this is all way before that. You know.
Right. Right. You're going to be dealing with, you know, whatever the 2-bit criminal is that killed the Waynes. And whatever mafia influences were around before the days of Batman.
Right. So it's, I don't know who's going to watch it.
You might as well just make it Law and Order of Gotham City, you know?
Exactly. Like, and it's just, it's not going to appeal to the diehard.
CSI Gotham.
CSI Gotham.
It's not going to appeal to the diehard comic fans. And if it's just a good you know, crime show, then it's like, well, who cares if it's Gotham or not? It's not going to make a difference, you know?
I don't, maybe they'll find a way. I'm experiencing a certain degree of cynicism this time of year, apparently.
Yes.
I like how we can bash stuff really good before it's even put to paper yet. I mean,
that is nerd power. That's what yes. we do.
But we're wielding it incorrectly. Chris Hardwick would be very disappointed in us right now.
Yeah, that's true.
To sorry, judge Chris. Before it happens.
Well, he not asks that we, he asks that we don't do it, but this exactly. still doesn't stop us. and then, you know, and then finally...
I'm not saying it's going to be bad. I'm just saying I'm going to hold judgment until I see it, and then I'll tell you, say it's bad.
And in 2013, we had the launch of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I've heard that's a good show.
Yeah. Well, there's also a really good show that comes on after it. It's called Agents of Speak. It's the wrap-up show.
Yeah, it's kind of rambly, and the host is weird.
It'll yeah. be canceled soon.
Yeah, they need to replace that
is guy. Is that on with... Fox, too?
No, that's on YouTube.
If they replace the host with some hot chick, I would watch that.
Maybe we should write them in. Maybe they'll do that. So, just quick. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the, you know, for those who don't know, is the, you know, small screen tie-in to the Avengers, well, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, told from a S.H.I.E.L.D. team's point of view, basically.
Right. And currently the only tie-in, though we yes. supposedly will be getting more next year.
This is true. Quite a few of them, actually.
Yes.
All available on Netflix.
Yes, Netflix. It should be interesting.
But
I can't wait to see what they're going to do with it. That's, you know, if they hire somebody really good, the budget that Netflix could come up with and the freedom for the writers could make this very, very worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yes.
Here's my only concern with it. The way that Netflix model works, they produce these shows, and they will release them all at once. So they'll release an entire season in one fell swoop, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that, because it's the new media. Where I do take issue is, how do they nest that into any continuity they're building elsewhere? So say, for instance, the first show they do is, for argument's sake, Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
If that has basically what they're going to have to build these things in a bubble, so that they can't like there's not going to be the ability to have like tie backs between these like Daredevil and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it's the continuity is different, like the timing continuity is different, so it wouldn't really work. You know, it'd be fine for the future continuity of rolling into movies. But with the small screen continuities, it's going to be a problem.
Well, they're just going to have at the end of every episode a little blurb that says, "See episode blah 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 of this series next."
like you get in a comic book.
Exactly. Ooh, hey.
Yeah, but they do them serially too, and I think you just proved my point. You know, you don't see comic books releasing 12 issues in 1 month.
Yes. No, that's so true. Because, I mean, let's look at, they did the Thor tie-in with the movie on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but, you know, it was 2 weeks after the movie was released, and it worked, you know, in that sense.
Yeah.
Enough people had seen the movie where any events that tied directly to it, you know, you could just watch the show, and it worked. Right.
But it also was loose enough that if you didn't see the movie, it wasn't really spoiling anything, or you didn't feel lost.
Right, right. And then now apparently there is going to be, you know, the Captain America tie-in, and I think I heard that episode will actually air prior to the release of the movie. So there'll be something that happens in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which will have an impact in the movie. You know, maybe something small, but still it'll be tied in.
It'll be
Coulson and Steve Rogers run into each other in the streets.
Yeah,
but aside from that,
because it'll be the only time you hear Steve Rogers curse.
Because it's released serially, they can do that.
Yeah,
right. When you release all 12 episodes at once, and a person is free to watch all of them whenever they want, you can't just tie one episode into Avengers 2. You have to. Something that overarching the story has to tie into the whole thing.
Right. Now, granted, they might be able to do it like an off-season type thing. So say they do the whole season of Daredevil that introduces Daredevil, and they release all that on Netflix, and they happen to release that while, you know, between seasons 1 and 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
They could feasibly have Daredevil show up on season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in maybe an episode or two to tie him in, and then you won't actually see him in the Netflix show again until later down the road when they release season 2 on Netflix.
That would work. That could work.
But then you're also dealing with cross-network stuff that's potentially tricky.
Yeah, don't cross the streams.
Well, but I mean, it's I don't know. I think networks are a little bit different than the companies producing them, because it's Marvel Entertainment producing the shows. It's just where they're airing. You know, ABC, you know, obviously ABC's owned by Disney, who now owns Marvel, so that makes sense. That's where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, which is interesting why they, you know, but they went to Netflix. I guess they wanted the freedom to just be able to release all of these quickly and see how they do. So, and real quick back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because we didn't really talk about it, probably because we talk about the show enough.
You think?
But just, you know, a real quick review of the whole first half of the season. You know, it was interesting because we got a really deep, involved plot in the first few episodes, and then they did a bunch of one-offs that didn't really, you know, didn't even really tie into what happened in the beginning few episodes. And then we get back to the season finale where now it all ties back in together, and there's the big what the heck moments at the end of the episode. So it was typical Whedon, I think.
Yeah, it definitely, they did have that sort of, they fell away from it, they felt loose and episodic, but they managed to not only tie it back to the start of the season, but tied other things into it, and made the season feel more cohesive so far than it has up into the point, you know, prior to the mid-season finale.
Right. I just kind of wish they had peppered stuff in each episode a little bit more. Not it doesn't have to concentrate on in the episode. It doesn't have to beat you in the face with it, but just, you know, and not Tahiti's a magical place in every episode. That can beat you in the face. But
although, to be fair, you might see more of that. Like, with the upcoming episodes, with some of the things they may face as they chase down, you know, the people that have Coulson, you might see that some of these little bit pieces that we came across throughout the season do tie back in ways that we didn't realize.
True, then that would be the perfect Josh Whedon-esque thing to do.
Yeah.
And to be fair, we were only halfway through the first season, and it looks like they're already about to solve the, you know, the Tahiti thing. So I think it wasn't really overused if they're going to resolve that plot point now.
Well, we're all expecting that, but is it going to happen? That's, you know, we won't know until January 7th if they actually solve it or not.
Yeah, but if they drag this out for the entire season, then I'm going to be a little bit fed up, I think.
Yes. So.
But we really like these things, don't we? Yes. We like these shows.
We do like it. We love the show. But, you know, we're internet people.
Yes.
Not YouTube commenters, just internet people.
Well, to follow on the small screen, I think that there's a couple other more loosely related shows that have come out this year that are worth noting. Almost Human being one that I know you guys aren't watching, but you should be. What other ones? The Tomorrow People is another CW one it's okay. Again, it's a CW show, and it feels like one.
You mean it looks like one.
And it looks like one, too.
It's all pretty people.
Yeah. It's all pretty people with melodrama. But though it's an interesting premise. And to go back a little further, in 2013, we had Orphan Black that premiered this year. And was a great show that, again, you guys, if you're not watching it, you should be. Because it's an awesome show on the BBC America. And I think the second season of that is coming out soon. Starting in January or something.
Maybe I keep meaning to watch it.
Maybe you just watch too much TV, Ben.
I know I watch too much TV. We haven't even gotten into cartoons yet.
I know. And I was just about to say, you know, now we go from the small screen to the small people.
Yes.
So this year started out with...
Not that short.
This year started out with some interesting...
It started out with some dramatic changes in the cartoon landscape that that I think many of us were a little bit peeved at.
I wrote a whole article about the first one on my list here.
Yes.
Young Teen Justice Stop. Out.
Go ahead.
Young Justice Out, Teen Titans In.
Yes.
Not Teen Titans Go. In, yes. Which is not Teen Titans.
Sorry, Teen Titans Go In.
Right. It's the same characters, but it's not the same show.
No, not in the tiniest bit. Which, you know...
I like what you did.
It angered a lot of people, though.
Young Justice was a great, great show. It had a great continuity. It introduced a lot of characters in a really believable and interesting way. It managed to make, you know, sidekicks into heroes in a way that was palatable and fun. There were strong female characters in that show that were relatable and good role models. And they had real problems that they had to deal with that were, you know, relatable.
But the
but apparently the continuity was too much for children.
Well, that's the thing, right? And I posted a nice long article on our website about this, and it's like I was angry at first, and I'm like really ticked off, and then I'm watching the show with my son, and he loves it, you know.
Yeah.
And how do your kids feel about Teen Titans Go?
They enjoy it. Although surprisingly, like they enjoyed it because it's geared towards them. It's geared towards their audience.
Right.
But at the same time, they're like, they enjoy watching them, but they don't make a concerted effort to make sure they watch all of them. You know, they come and go and they take them in fits and spurts. That lack of continuity keeps them from having a motivation to try to make sure they see them all.
Right. See, I don't share your opinion that it was the continuity that was the problem. It was the complexity of the storyline that they were weaving.
Yeah.
There was a huge time jump. Everybody switched places. You had all these plots that kept finding out after things were set up. Mm-hmm. So they kept jumping around so much that by halfway through the season, you could not watch an episode out of sync without getting completely, utterly lost.
Right, right. It was like Lost in cartoon form.
Yeah, it started out nice, one after the other. They're developing the team, okay, fine. And all of a sudden, you've got alien invasion, and you're time jumping 5 years ahead, and you've got all these thread plot points, which would normally be okay, with the exception of that they did not present it in a linear fashion. And even the storyline, even the storytelling where you could present it in a non-linear fashion would have been okay, except there were 50 of these storylines, so nobody could keep up with it.
So now, I'll posit this though: say that DC scrapped all of their other TV ideas that they had on the horizon to instead make a live-action primetime Young Justice show. Would you watch it?
A live-action Young Justice?
Yes. For adults.
Oh, hell yeah. Are you kidding me?
And if they put it on the CW, it would be all pretty people.
Oh, God. No. No,
no, not you're ruining it, Dave. You're ruining it.
We'd have to put it on Fox so we'll be sure that there'll only be one season.
Yes. That's not better.
Well, it'll never be on ABC, so I don't know.
That's true.
And Netflix
you'd,
will be
you'd have the
budget.
G.I. Joe effect there where everybody's shooting and nobody gets hit.
I just meant, you know, because of the whole Disney Marvel, but you know.
And that's why I like this Netflix thing, is because we could it'd be the
Do
same.
Do they own a premium channel? They need to own a premium channel.
I don't know. Maybe they could always outsource to like Showtime. Showtime, I think, still is willing to take up stuff like that, like they did with, Continuum, no, Stargate.
Yeah, but they also took up Torchwood and killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Oh.
Still bitter about that one.
Yeah. So then the other one was Green Lantern was out.
Yeah.
But where the Batman
because
is.
Because apparently they can't have more than one, 3D animation studio running at the same time.
That's expensive. DC's still number two,
Let's get a second computer for rendering, and then they can make both shows.
Ever since Bruce Timm retired, this is what happens. Because he kept everything running for, 20 years?
Yeah.
20 years. We had, 8 different series, and all of them with continuity, cross-continuity.
Yeah.
They got to find somebody else like that.
Yeah, but I fear that Beware the Batman will go the way of Green Lantern, because it's not...
Yeah.
I haven't been drawn... I tried to get into it, and I just really have not followed it. I've watched maybe the first 5 episodes, and I've sort of lost the thread. It's got a continuity to it, it's got a story it's building, but it just doesn't feel like a recognizable version of Batman that I can get into.
I think the other issue, too, is, in all honesty... I enjoyed the Green Lantern cartoon. I really got into it. I was watching it. And then Batman, it's like another Batman cartoon. I just couldn't do it. It was like, maybe it's my age and I really enjoyed the Batman animated series. So now to go back and yet another origin.
Yeah.
Another whole, they've had. Not but just Batman the Animated Series and then all of the ones that spun off of that, but there was the Batman that was just a few years ago. And what was the other one? The Brave and the Bold. And then all of a sudden now, Beware the Batman. It's like, come on. Just, guys, you have other characters. Just stop it with Batman already.
Yeah, how many times can you reboot it?
Right, exactly. Green Lantern was good. No reason to cancel it,
Right. To cancel a show that, and arguably, when was the last time there was a Green Lantern show, period? It's a property that's sort of been ignored, in the small screen, and it's a character that's easy to do, off-the-wall things, because it's intergalactic, and so you can have all sorts of different kinds of weird, wacky aliens and, plots that you couldn't do in a terrestrial-based show.
Right.
And that show had legs. They were doing a very good job with it,
I think. They were building out all the different, they introduced red lanterns and blue lanterns and orange lanterns and had, the makings of the yellow rings coming into existence, with their yellow crystals.
And Star Sapphire.
Star Sapphire and the Anti-Monitor and... all these different things that they did, that it was really well fleshed out. They had brought in a lot of things that from the, 50 years of continuity, they managed to fit into 2 seasons of the show.
Right. Oh, well, it's gone. Never to return. And then in the Marvel world, there was another switch, which I thought was odd. And I don't know. I mean, I think you've been watching them a little bit more than I have been, but, Earth's Mightiest Heroes was replaced with Avengers Assemble.
Yeah, and I have been watching it, and I have to say, I like the Avengers Assemble, but it's apples to apples. It seemed like they replaced it, and they didn't lose anything, per se, other than just the continuity they'd spent all that time building. It's just yeah, I know we spend all this time building this version of this Marvel Universe, but now we want to build a version that we can technically tie into, the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon that's successful, so that we can have crossovers.
But not Hulk Agents of Smash. That does not exist. It is dead to me.
But here, hold on, before we get onto that one. But also, they did tie Spider-Man into Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
they tied the character in, but they didn't tie the continuity into it.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal. Now all of a
sudden, it wasn't the same Nick Fury. Like, they looked similar, but it wasn't the same Nick Fury.
It was just like a new 52 reboot, you know?
Yeah. So it's I can forgive it, but at the same time, I'm still waiting for them to build more in it. Like, the Ultimate, or the Avengers Assemble series so far, I liked, you know, the characters are a little bit closer to the movie versions, though also being a little more cartoony than the movie versions at the same time. So I can see the relatability there, because, you know, Cap is wearing a costume you can recognize from the movie, from Avengers, and so are all the other characters. Like, it carries well from that, if that's what you're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But then is divergent from there, because it introduces, you know, Atuma and the, you know, his mer people, and, you know, various other things that they're never going to show necessarily in the movies, in this show. And they have Hawkeye on his, you know, flying motorcycle all over town. So it's a mixed thing, I guess. I don't know. I'm okay with it, but it just feels like it's, you know, just a reskin of what they already had.
Right.
You know, we are going to get to a point where they're going to be launching three different versions of the same hero or set of heroes. It just feels like, I mean, what, they canceled the Spider-Man 4 only to announce Spider-Man 1 again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just...
Well, there's already controversy now circling with Andrew Garfield's continuity in that, because they've contracted out that they're going to do 4 movies, but Andrew Garfield's only signed on for 3. So...
So we'll get another reboot after the next 2.
I hope to God that it's not a reboot, but just a franchising. But even then, like, is he really going to be that old and washed up that he can't really keep doing it? Or is he just not going to want to do it? I don't know. If they have to recast it, as long as they find someone who can fluidly take over the part, I'm okay with it. As long as it's not another reboot. Because if it's another reboot, I'm out.
They can get George Clooney and put nipples on the suit.
No, they can't.
Oh, okay. And then, John, I mean, they launched the greatest cartoon of all time this year, and that's Hulk, Agents of Smash.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the 4th season of Friendship is Magic, but that's okay.
No, I said launched, you know, that's been going on.
No, so you meant the Equestria Girls movie, right?
I do not get Agents of Smash at all.
No, I don't either.
To be fair, I can't say, you know, hither nor yon about it, because I've only watched the pilot episodes. They're all on my DVR, but my kids have not been motivated enough to watch them, so they're sitting there just waiting.
Which, there you go. I mean, right there, it's like, if the kids don't want to watch it,
they'll come around to it. I think it's just that it's not top of mind, and there's other things to watch.
It just seems like, it seemed like a really odd concept. Like, okay, we're going to take the Hulk, and now he's going to talk and have, you know, Joe Fixit level intelligence.
They kind of did set that up in Ultimate Spider-Man.
They did, and I'm not even, that doesn't even bother me that much. That part I can deal with. It's just it was an unnecessary show, I think.
Yeah.
And they
use it as a launch point to introduce Scar, who has such a more convoluted backstory than they are ever going to introduce in this show.
Right.
And when did the Red Hulk become? I mean, there's a lot of backstory with General Ross becoming
right, and they just sort of jumped to, oh yeah, he's here now.
Yeah, and he's best buds with them. He's drinking beers with them.
Yeah, right. it's like an odd couple type relationship, and it's just like, what? Like, come on, this doesn't make any sense. Like,
yeah, and Rick. When did he become one? I know there's continuity behind that somewhere, but
that's happened in the comics.
Yeah,
but that actually happened along the lines of the Red Hulk storyline. In the comics, Red Hulk happened, and he fought the Hulk, and he like beat the crap out of the Hulk, and that's when Rick Jones purposely exposed himself to the gamma radiation to help out the Hulk, hoping he would turn into something helpful, and became A-bomb.
Because the Red Hulk killed Abomination with a gun.
Yeah.
And that's what started the whole thing. And it's like,
it was very investigative, like CSI, like the way they played it out, which was interesting because it was also kept a lot of mystery because you didn't know who the Red Hulk was for a long time.
Right, right. But yeah, this is just
and why, like, he doesn't have a mustache.
But now it's a buddy picture. It's like, I don't get it. Yeah, so that's all we need to say about Agents of Spectre. And then,
why isn't there continuity in the hairstyles between the hulked out versions and the non-hulked out versions? Like, why doesn't Red Hulk have a mustache?
I don't know.
Just saying. He should have one.
It gets sucked in when he changes.
Apparently.
Because it did it, because it would have made it easier. It made him easier to identify.
Yes.
Yeah. And then finally it happened. So Marvel bought out by Disney, and everyone was worried there were going to be Mickey Mouse was going to show up in Spider-Man comics.
I wasn't worried.
Well, you know,
they could team up. That could work well.
So, but it finally happened. They had their first Disney Marvel crossover.
Right.
This year,
not in the way you'd expect, though.
Yes, totally unexpected and entertaining
and totally awesome. Yeah, the Phineas and Ferb Marvel. What was it actually called? Not Marvel mashup, but something like that.
Right. The Avengers were on Phineas and Ferb with Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, sort of the Avengers. It was Spider-Man, Iron Man, Hulk, and Thor. And then they also had the bad guys of Red Skull and MODOK and Whiplash?
Yes, I believe it was Whiplash.
And I believe there was one more, but I can't remember who it was. But right. Basically, they Phineas and Ferb had accidentally depowered the Marvel heroes, and so they ended up having to help repower them, but in the meantime, we're helping them out in other ways, like breaking out the beak costume again.
Yes.
So it was, and you also got to see Perry suit up as some sort of like superhero-esque character.
Right. And it was an entertaining, you know, it was in the Phineas Ferb vein. It wasn't like,
yeah,
they didn't try to take Phineas and Ferb and make them serious. They took the Marvel characters and had fun with them.
Right.
And I
love that they made a Doctor Who joke in there as well, because they walked the Marvel heroes out to this like shed in their backyard, but it was shed, you know, it was S period, H period, E period, D period, which I can't even remember what that stood for necessarily, but they walked into it and it looks like this little, you know, lawnmower shed in the backyard, mm-hmm. but you walk in and it's a huge warehouse.
Right, right.
And they're like, whoa, and Ferb is like, we borrowed some British sci-fi technology.
Yes, yes. But it's funny because I think one of the things, as much as we hate Teen Titans Go, it brought some of that element into the Marvel Universe where something that appeals to younger viewers and get them interested in the Marvel characters,
yeah.
You know? And it was well done and enjoyable, and I'm sure it's not going to be the last crossover.
No, I'm sure they'll do more of it. I thought it was really well done, and the jokes were great in it. You know, very, you know, comments of what Phineas and Ferb always is, but also, you know, playing well with the characters. The characters were themselves.
Right.
and I love, like, you know, little moments like the Red Skull, after, you know, Perry had blasted his way through, the Red Skull was like, who was that masked beaver duck?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's everything in TV world worth mentioning from 2013.
Oh, no. You left out something. It's not necessarily superhero related, but it's definitely a cartoon
pretty
worth mentioning.
On CW? What?
No! Legend of Korra, damn it!
Was that launched in 2013?
No, but the second season was in 2013 and wrapped up recently.
Okay, alright.
Arrow didn't launch in 2013 either.
No, but we never really talked about it on the show before. But go ahead.
I understand that. I'm just saying, it was a great part of this year. They recently wrapped up book two, and I thought it was very well done. As it always is, like the Avatar series was great when that ran, and Legend of Korra has been, you know, carrying that mantle well.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it. Korra, at first, it bugged me. Because it just was like, it's the next Avatar. It wasn't like 20 years in the future, or, I mean, 20 generations in the future, or 10 generations. Right. It was
the very next one.
The very next one. And so there's
still... But I like that, though, because it makes it relatable, because you can have some of the character overlap. So you can see, all right, we know what happened. We know that, you know, that everything ended happily in the Avatar original series, but you want to know what happened to Aang in the aftermath, and Korra and all of the other characters.
Right.
And with this, you get to know that Aang and Katana got married and had a bunch of kids and had a happy life generally, but also their kids don't necessarily get along with each other. All these different changes happen in the world. You know, Toph's, you know, daughter ends up becoming the chief of police and is this hard-assed metalbender.
I wonder where she gets that from.
Right. But the thing is, too, like, it's weird because of, like, there's obviously a jump in technology because, you know, it's a generation or two generations later.
It's a large jump in technology.
It is, and it's fun, and it fits because it's like the industrial age hit.
Yeah, because now you have
all these different bending technologies. Before, they were segregated. Now they're all coming together, and it's like the melting pot of America that you have all these mixing of things, and it comes with new ideas and new ways of blending these ideas together. So,
right, and you kind of got the feeling, you know, in the olden days, as it were, they relied heavily on the benders to do stuff. And then, you know, as they started thinking of more technology,
you'll see less of a direct reliance and more of a, you know, they're important in creating these things, but then they can be all, you know, self-reliant. Like, they have cars now and planes that were built using fire bending and metal bending and things like that.
Right.
But exist as working, you know, mechanical objects that don't require additional bending to work.
Right, and once the war was over from the first series, you know, and we were at peace, all that technology from the Fire Nation could be shared with the rest of the world, and they can have steam-powered cars, you know?
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, I don't know, I just felt like, it just felt like aspects of it were relying too much on the first series, but I understand what you're saying about the familiarity to keep fans going.
Yeah. But they definitely, even with that, it's not sort of a, you know, here's Avatar, the Last Airbender again, but now it's a girl that's a waterbender. They've made it a more, its own story, its own development. Not only with the chronological timeline of advancements of things, but now, you know, the first season you had the non-benders rising up against the bending with Amon, you know, taking people's bending away, and that being the threat. And now in the second season, you have the water tribes going against each other, and, you know, with Korra's uncle being sort of the head of it, with this ulterior motive of, you know, opening up the bridge to the spirit world so that he can unlock the dark Avatar powers and become sort of a antithesis to the Avatar.
Right, and that's something my son just was saying. I was getting notes. You know, make sure you mention that there's a lot more about the spirit world in this one, and there is. There's a different take on the spirit world.
Right, and you actually get a really interesting and colorful and vibrant depiction of how the Avatar even started off. You see the first Avatar and an early version of this world where the spirits did live in the real world, and the and people lived in these of lion turtles.
Mm.
And that's the only places that people lived. But then, you know, Wan, the first airbender, the first Avatar, sort of started shaking that up, and people started leaving the cities and taking on the bending abilities they would only temporarily take on more permanently. And so the Lion Turtles, you know, said, all right, you guys, this is a new era. You guys are ready to do this yourself. We're going away. But then there became the whole struggle between the humans and the spirits that led to the Avatar sealing off the portal between the two worlds.
Right.
And making the world a world of men.
Right, right. Yeah, so you're right. It filled in a lot of backstory as well that they didn't touch on at all in the original series. So, all right. So now...
as in case that's not enough.
And that's not enough. And just real quick, we'll go over some of the things that happened in the comic book world this year. Mm-hmm. Starting off with possibly the biggest thing that that comic book fans haven't shut up about yet. And that was the launch of Superior Spider-Man.
Yes.
For those who don't know, they killed off Peter Parker. Bastards.
Sort of.
They switched... Peter Parker and Doc Ock switched minds. And
then Doc Ock's body died.
Was killed with Peter's mind in it. Ended the Amazing Spider-Man run.
And started the Superior Spider-Man run.
Right.
And for the first, you know, so many issues of it, you know, maybe the first 10, there was a sort of inherent struggle that Peter's memories sort of coalesced into this alter ego within him,
mm-hmm.
that sort of kept fighting for some level of power or control. but eventually Doc muscled him out by actually eliminating them. He kept the memories around because it helped him, you know, dealing with this new life and dealing with the things he needed to know. But, you know, when he realized that they were becoming sentient, knew he had to basically stifle, you know, cut them off.
Right.
So he cleansed them out.
Which, you know, led a lot of people to think, okay, well, this is going to be the status quo. But then at the end of the year, or towards the end of the year, they've released Amazing Spider-Man 700.1 and 700.2, hinting at the return of Peter Parker. And they haven't said how he's coming back yet, but they're hinting at it.
Madame Web will be involved somehow.
But yeah, I mean, it was an interesting... Again, it was an interesting take because it was... a different... It was Spider-Man, but with a different personality, slightly different intellect.
Yeah.
You know, he comes up with this concept of using spider bots all throughout the city and his smartphone, and that's how he patrols the city now, as opposed to...
Right, which works great for him for a period, but he's already sort of... It's being turned against him to some extent by... A new rising emergence of evil. You know, the Green Goblin's coming back and building an army of the vestiges of mobs that are left behind in the wake of what Spider-Man's taken out. And also finding a way to sort of disable or turn the Spider-Bots against Spider-Man in ways that allow him to, you know, allow them to exist unmonitored and unchecked. So there's a lot of interesting things there. And granted, I'm not caught up. I'm reading it through Marvel Unlimited, so it's a good number of months behind in what's available. But you know, I'm working through it, and if I feel so motivated, I might actually start buying issues to read them and catch up.
Right.
What's also interesting though is that the Avenging Spider-Man series had started up before this turn of events, and follows the continuity. So you see the issues of Avenging Spider-Man that fell in line with Amazing Spider-Man, you know, up until that demise, and then you have continuity from the start of Superior Spider-Man, and so you see, and most of those are sort of Spider-Man teaming up with one or more members of the Avengers for side mission type things,
mm-hmm.
So you see a transition of Spider-Man being accepted into the, you know, to do these missions, to Doc Ock posing as Spider-Man and trying not to get caught and trying not to get kicked out and things like that. But also being, you know, as he is, feeling better than all of these people and feeling like he doesn't need to team up with anybody.
Right, right. Yeah, it's... again, like I said, it was interesting. A lot of fans were upset by it. And I don't know. I mean, I grew to like... I've read, you know, a few of the issues, and I've grown to like it. I'm not as happy as I would like to be about it, but, you know, it's an interesting take. You know, it's something interesting to read, and I think they could keep it going for another year if they wanted to.
True.
I think they're getting ready to jump back to Pitt Parker because, you know, they're probably afraid they're going to lose readers.
Well, I don't think they're afraid of that. I think that they know what their statute of limitations are because they've done these sorts of things before.
True, true.
You know, they've killed off Captain America before, and they knew how long they could let him be dead before they could bring him back.
Right.
You know, before they lose readers to the new Cap that was the Winter Soldier and things like that. So, you know, Marvel's done this for enough years that they know those lines. They know how long they can play these things out before they start alienating people.
Right. Yeah. And then, aside from poor Petey, there were two... Now, one of the things I wanted to point out is... I haven't read these storylines yet, but I wanted to point this out because, you know, for a while Marvel and DC were doing one big event during the summer.
Yeah.
That crossed over, you know, their books or whatever. Now in 2013, there were two events from both houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first one being Age of Ultron from Marvel.
Yeah.
Where, basically. Ultron comes back and wins, you know, takes over the world, and then the Avengers have to get together and defeat him, you know.
Right. Rise from the ashes.
Yeah, rise from the ashes and come back and get him.
Or their children do. There was a cartoon where their children came back and took him out.
Yes.
There was. From
with the Hulk.
Back, the next Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that was all part of the Marvel Now event that... has been taking place, you know, and it's, you know, it's, I haven't read it. I've read about the story. It's interesting. A lot of people think they're going to borrow ideas from this for the next Avengers movie. I don't see that because it's going to be the creation of Ultron and not, they're not going to have him win.
Yeah. Well, they may not go so far, but they may borrow some ideas from it, you know, loosely. Right. Although, wasn't there also, prior to the Age of Ultron, there was the Avengers versus X-Men event this year as well?
That's just an on... Well, that actually did start last year, and that's been an ongoing title they've had.
Sure, but the actual events of it, like the whole Phoenix saga, played out in this year.
Hmm. I don't know. Like I said, I've been behind... I haven't been reading that much from Marvel and DC. Been reading a lot of stuff from Xenoscope and Independence that started sending me stuff. So, yeah, I'm not sure. But then the Age of Ultron then became the Infinity storyline, which when we were came out around the same time we interviewed Jeff from Marvel.
Yeah,
and you know. Basically, it's of course, it's a Thanos story attacking the Earth. Somehow,
so you're saying they're playing out in the comics basically the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It seems like, you know, they're not only are they hitting you with two big events, but they're kind of
foreshadowing.
You know, they might not take these stories exactly.
Right,
but they're going to take pieces because
they're modernizing them and re-releasing them today, and sort of getting a feel for reaction to them and seeing how they can tweak them to fit the movie universe.
Right. So I mean, it's interesting, and I think it's it's kind of a bold move on Marvel's part in that respect, but it also shows they have control of their entire universe, and they want to have a unified story and a unified front going forward, you know. So, you know, buoy to them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, on the DC side, we had Trinity War and what's the other one? Forever Evil. So, Trinity War was 11-issue story. Which featured the Justice League and the Justice League Dark, which I didn't even know what they were until I looked it up, and it basically they're the it's the Justice League, but the more mystical characters from the DC universe, like Deadman, and Constantine, and those kinds of guys.
Yeah.
Basically they clash in order to solve the mystery of Pandora's box. What's interesting is that in this story, this is the New 52, so they've relaunched the, you know, with the New 52, everyone knows by now, they relaunched the whole DC universe, right? They hit the reset.
Yeah.
No more Infinite Crisis, no more Crisis on multiple Earths, and all that stuff is gone. Totally new continuity.
Yeah.
And yet they reveal there's an Earth 3
in good.
Trinity War. And it's like, come on, guys. Like,
really? So can I ask you a question? Because I don't follow the DC stuff as closely. The New 52. Are they done yet with the 52? Have they released 52 comics yet?
What they've been doing is they're doing what they call waves. In the sense of when they launched, they had 52 titles.
Right.
But
I'm just wondering how much longer I have to hear the term New 52 before it's dead.
Until they relaunch again. But the thing is, what they keep doing is like they'll cancel title and then bring another one in, so that they constantly have 52 titles going.
Right.
In fact, what I was reading actually last night, starting up next year, they're going to have Justice League 3000, which the title is kind of self-explanatory. It's the Justice League, but in the future.
Yeah, and I actually saw...
That's called Legion, though, isn't it?
It should be. But I saw, I actually heard about that, and I saw artwork for it, and I thought it was horrible. Like, I saw the supposed year 3000 versions of the characters, and I did not like them. I was not a fan.
Yeah. And then, they're going to be having a Batman Beyond... ongoing comic, so that should be good, as long as it's keeps true to the cartoon.
Yeah, until that continuity doesn't fit anymore.
Right.
Through reboots and other things. That's one of the difficulties, though, with trying to maintain multiple timeline continuities in worlds that they keep rebooting, because there's a point at which they're not going to fit anymore. Like, and Marvel does it much less, but they do have titles like that. Like, they had, for instance, like a Spider-Girl title that they ran for a while that was supposed to be, like, you know, Peter Parker and Mary Jane's daughter taking up the mantle.
Right.
I don't think that's running anymore, and I don't think it would fit anymore in the universe they've created. The only other ones that the Marvel's really done with that, like, they've kept the Ultimate Universe almost completely siloed away from the regular universe with minor crossovers. But the only other continuity they don't really maintain anymore, but they keep referencing back to, is the 2099 stuff they did back in the late 90s, which they still occasionally borrow back into current continuity.
Right.
So.
And then spawning off of Trinity War was the Forever Evil storyline, which it took place on Earth 3 with the Justice League from Earth 3, and basically the villains form the crime syndicate and take over, and I'm not a big DC person either, and I've read the Batman stuff in the New 52. And that's about it, because Court of Owls is the most awesome story ever written in the last 10 years. But the thing with that I heard is what they did is a Villains Month, which was in October. So in every title, the story focused on whoever the main villain is of the character. So Superman, it wasn't a Superman story; it was a Lex Luthor story. Batman, it was a Joker story. So on and so forth. And I've heard a lot of negative reviews of those books. Which makes you go, well, then why'd you guys do it? Like, you know, a publicity stunt for the sake of a publicity stunt sometimes isn't a good idea, you know?
Yeah, but I think that if, and I haven't read them, so I can't really judge them, but I would find interest in a book, not a whole running series, but maybe a single issue that turned things on its head and looked at it from the perspective of, say, the Joker for an issue. If it was basically getting a little bit of, here's the things that actually motivate the Joker. Here's how the Joker acts when he's not actively fighting, you know, bad guys.
Right.
You know, so to speak.
Right. No, and
I mean, good guys.
Good guys. So. And they did that, though, a couple years ago in that Joker one-shot that I lent you and I'm sure you haven't read yet.
It's still in my backpack.
But, you know, and it was really well done. It came out around the time of The Dark Knight.
I keep meaning to read it.
So it's like, so it was done. So they don't need to do it again, you know, just because it's Villains Month.
Right, but I'm saying that they could do that with, maybe they don't need to do it again with the Joker, but they could do it with other characters, right, as long as they do it well.
So, all right. Wow. So.
So I think we've covered the comic stuff for the year. I think there's a lot of events,
right,
and there may be new ones, I'm sure, in the next year that we'll talk about.
So, as we're getting winding down here, just you know, let's take a moment in memoriam. Is that
in memoriam?
In memoriam, for some of the people who have passed away this year, related to not just comic books, but, you know, to nerd things.
The nerd media.
And we can start with Richard Griffiths. People are... you were not sure who he was.
I know now.
Yes, he played Vernon...
Vernon Dursley.
Dursley in the Harry Potter series.
Harry Potter. And, which he did well. I liked his depiction of that role, even though it was a small part. It was well fleshed out in the movies, and he characterized it well, and so it's a shame to see his passing. Not that there's likely to be any more Harry Potter movies, but it would have been interesting to see some other spin on that.
Right. So, he passed away in March, and he was 65 years old. You know, it's funny because us in the United States obviously know him from the Harry Potter movies because they were the big ones. But some of the other movies he was in, he was actually in Superman 2. He was one of the terrorists.
Huh.
Yeah. Let's see. He was in Gorky Park. He was in Gandhi. Let's see.
Well, he played a bunch of random British people.
Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear. He's been in a lot of things, you know. I mean, since 1977, you know. So he had a very successful career, you know, and it is a shame that, you know, he didn't really become big in the United States until the Harry Potter movies, but hey, he was in the Harry Potter movies. So,
yeah.
You know, as they say in on Hollywood Babylon, big bucket of wind.
Hmm.
And then moving on, actually, in February of this year, Robin Sachs passed away.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just looked him up, and I didn't realize I knew him, but I do.
Yes, you
do. He was a very made-up villain in Galaxy Quest, but he also had a bit recurring part in the Buffy series as Ethan Rain. That was an enjoyable character.
Yes, he also played various characters on Babylon 5, Natook, Hedron, and Nakal. Galaxy Quest. He was in an episode of Voyager. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. He was Admiral Saul Carath in that game. He was Sergeant Roderick in a SpongeBob SquarePants episode. He was a voice in Dragon Age Origins, Mass Effect 2. He was in Torchwood Miracle Day, Mass Effect 3, Resident Evil, Mass Effect 3, Citadel. So
I think you should just link to the IMDb page in our in the post. We don't need to read every single one.
I will do that. Yes. So we can keep it moving along. All right. So in the world of comics, I wanted to mention Carmen Infantino passed away. He was responsible for the Silver Age Flash, and he's in the Will Eisner Hall of Fame. I actually met him a couple years ago at a convention, and he was just a sweet old man. He was passed away in April. He was 87 years old, and I'll link him to his bibliography to our to the description. Just a huge body of work for both Marvel and DC, and he was a really nice guy, you know. So from the comics world, we had Nick Carty, passed away in October. He was 93 years old, and he was best known for his work on Aquaman. He actually did the first, I think it was 36 issues of Aquaman as the artist. He was the penciler. So, yes, another one. Again, I'll just link these because we're running a little long, folks. And El Plastino passed away. He was best known. He just recently passed away in November. And he's somebody everyone should know because he was the co-creator of Supergirl and Brainiac. And the Legion of Superheroes. So, huge influence in the DC universe, this gentleman, his artwork. And he passed away in November. He was 91 years old. Some great comic book artists. Unfortunately, what's been going on is these are some of the greats from the Gold and Silver Age that are still around that are just, you know... Fortunately, that's what happens. It's the inevitable end of life.
Yeah. So. It happens. It comes. Well, they live long, rich lives, which is a good thing.
Yes. So. Nothing. We brought the house down. Right, John?
Yep.
Yeah, so this is an excellent way to go out.
No, actually, what I want to go out with... So the other thing that that happened this year is that there was a podcast that started.
Really? Who was that? Was it a good one?
I don't know if it's a good one, but it's it stars you and John. And
I'm already disinterested.
And our two occasional cohorts. And I just wanted to say, sincerely, thank you to you, Ben, you, John, and Scott and Pete, who aren't here with us tonight, for helping me out and doing this crazy idea. And, it's been a fun 2013 doing this.
It has been. It has been a fun year.
And hopefully we can keep it going in 2014.
We'll see if my contract gets renewed.
Oh. Darn it. You still want more money.
You can subtract the word more there.
Oh, okay. You just want money. I also want to give a shout-out to Comics, who was not only our he was our first actual interview, but he's come in a couple times and helped out on Agent Speak. So thanks to him for that. And Johnny Fournier, who I like to call our West Coast speaker.
Yeah.
He's stepped in on a couple episodes. We've been on his show, which was a lot of fun. And if you guys are interested in our origin story, that you should check out Johnny's interview with us on Nerd Unemployed.
Yeah, that was a fun episode.
Hmm.
Also, a shout out to the guys from all the podcasts on Rhymes with Geek. I just was on, or earlier this year, actually, by the time this airs, it'll be 3 weeks ago.
It was yesterday.
By the time this goes up, It was three weeks ago. I was on Crisis on Infinite, or multiple podcasts, which is run by the guys from Real Books Don't Have Batman, who we hooked up with from Rhymes with Geek, and I was also on the Rhymes with Geek crossover podcast a couple months ago. So that's been a great relationship with all those podcasts on there. Yeah. And hope to keep that going in 2014. And I just also a thank you to all the guests that we've had this year.
Yeah, we've had an interesting set of guests between Eric and Doug Jones, and you mentioned Jeff Sutter.
Yeah,
it's been a fun year.
Yeah, Steve Scott and JG were also really great guests. Hopefully we're gonna have some more interesting guests in 2014.
And by that he doesn't mean more interesting, just more guests interesting.
More guests that are interesting guests. I'm sorry, I'm not saying any of our guests weren't interesting this year because they were all wonderful. So yes,
We're running a contest to see who's the least interesting guest of 2013. No, we're not. So.
No. That was just we ran a contest that no one participated in, which was who was the rudest response to not being on the show.
Besides me?
Besides you, yes, yeah. You know, and I don't know how I've tricked you into doing all these shows, but
you mean I'm on the show?
Yes. Yes. You've been on it since when did we start? A while ago. Well, folks, I think we're going to wrap it up. So, you guys have any big plans for New Year's?
To survive it and see how long my kids can stay awake before imploding.
How about you, John?
Catch up on all the things that I'm still trying to catch up on.
Yeah.
Got to finish Korra. I've got, apparently a lot of comics to read, so.
And maybe by the time this comes out, you'll magically have caught up on those things.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and there's spend time with my family too somewhere in there, I'm sure.
Yes.
I've heard they're interesting people.
Yeah.
Families.
All right. Well, I hope you guys have a safe and happy new year.
And happy holidays.
And happy holidays. And thank you all for listening in 2013. And stay tuned because 2014, we're going to keep coming at you.
And you know what's an important thing for them to be able to keep tuning in?
What's that?
That they not get their Cape Cod in the door.
Oh! See what you did there? I see what you did there.
I'm glad one of us did.
All right. So, yes. Don't you get caught in the door. See, you ruined it. You just...
I didn't ruin it. I set it up there. I teed it.
You teed it and I missed.
Yes.
That's why nerds don't play sports. Yes. All right, everyone. Enjoy your New Year's. We'll see you in 2014.
Hey everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak, which you can reach at ben@superheroespeak.com. And additionally, you can also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John. You can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com, and if you want, there's our Twitter account @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.